Okay, hi. My name is Adriana Cisco, and I'm interviewing Catherine. Actually, wait, let's start over because I need to make sure that I have your middle and last name right. So it's Catherine Gail Bailey, right?
Yes, Catherine Gail Bailey.
Okay, got it. So I'll cut out that false start later.
Okay.
So I'll start over. So my name is Adriana Cisco, and I'm interviewing Catherine Gail Bailey for The Country, Remembering Lexington's First Bar. The date is September 28, 2021, and we are conducting this interview over Zoom. So, first, Catherine, thank you for talking with me today.
You're
And
welcome.
thank you. And to start us off, how about you tell me a little bit about yourself in general?
Okay, I'm going to reposition here. Is that okay? Does that mess up things?
No, reposition away, because that if you think it looks better, let's do
Well,
it.
it's not about that as much as to be comfortable and be able to talk to you. I'm here on the farm, so that. All
Okay.
right, I'm ready.
Yeah, that works
I'm ready.
for me. All right. Well,
Okay.
now that you're comfortable, yeah, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so my name's Catherine Gail Bailey, and I am a healthcare executive now. I've got five different degrees and a master's in nursing, MBA, and some other things from engineering on. I grew up in Lexington, Kentucky, which is where this all takes place, and then I ventured on from there. So currently, I live in a farm in Ohio and raise my grandchildren. I live with my partner 35 years and our son. So that's where we are now.
Okay, perfect. Well, you mentioned, obviously that most of the story takes place in Lexington and you were born there and grew up there. So let's go ahead and start there. Give me the gist of what it was like growing up in Lexington, just your as a child, childhood in Lexington. What was that like?
Well, I think Lexington is a really a great town. It's probably a little bit more progressive than most towns that I've been accustomed to. So I find that real pleasing. I still frequent going there. Like I went to the Blues Bar the other night down there. I drove from my home in Ohio to there. And so I still have a great fondness for the city. I know a lot of people there. And I think the city was a great place to grow up. I think sometimes it might have been some of the better places I've been.
And some more details. Was religion a part of your household growing up at all, and to what degree? For example, did you all miss church?
Absolutely.
Okay, so tell
We
me.
went to church a couple times a week. Grew up Baptist and Methodist, both depending on whether I was at my grandmother's or my mother's. So yes, it was a very much a part of growing up.
Okay. And tell me about school. What was school like for you going to school?
Well, school was great. I mean, I always excelled in school, so that was a lot of fun. And I was on the track team. I was president of the senior class, the junior class, and the freshman class. I was a cheerleader. I was in a lot of the clubs and did a lot of not only sports, from track, tennis, those type of things. So I had a lot of fun in school. School was very positive. I graduated from Lafayette High School and went to Lindley Junior High, and so I had a real positive school experience.
Oh, okay, I see. And you mentioned you were into a couple different sports. Did you ever play softball?
Oh yeah, we played softball every summer in Lexington for the Lexington Parks and Recreation League, as well as summer ba fall basketball. So I did both things, and then after I got older, I sponsored a baseball, a softball, girls softball team called the Rookies. And we played against the Lexington Pavers and just had a really great experience growing up. The Parks and Recreation was a run well and very focused on women's sports. And so we had a lot of opportunity to participate, so that was all good.
And growing up during this time period, as you're going to school and you're playing these different sports, what is your awareness of gay or LGBT, queer, you know, whatever the preferred term is. What is your awareness of LGBT people as in their existence or anything? Did you ever hear anything, or was that not really a topic, you know, at that
point? That was really not a topic other than, you know, we had our own little social club at high school level, not junior high, but high school level. And so we wore those things, but we really didn't use that terminology. But we had a basketball team and we were all very close and had relationships. And so we were, we just didn't use the terminology like they do today as much.
Oh,
you know, it's a much more secretive type society.
Yeah, if you can. Yeah, that's fascinating. If you can, tell me a little bit more about that. As in sort of like, right, you're not using like certain like terminology, but you are like making these connections and these relationships and these friendships, and you're finding each other, you know, somehow.
Right.
Yeah. And I just want to hear more about that.
Well, it's going, babe. No, go on. Talk to mama. Sorry. I have grandkids. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Well, you know, it's just like, and you know, you somehow find each other because you know you're different, and you know you're you know that you seek companionship, so you start looking for avenues to do that. You don't really do that consciously. It's just you just start doing it, and then you happen upon each other, you know, and then before you know it, you know lots of folks, and you know, you have a kind of a group you belong to, and acceptance and everything. Y'all please go upstairs or outside. Thank you.
Okay, I see. And you mentioned the phrase, you know, you just know you're different, and it's not really this hyper conscious intentional decision. It's just naturally you start to form, you know, relationships, friendships, etc. And
all of my bunch, you know, we were well known in school. We participated in everything. And so, you know, we were conservative natured about it all. So we, you know, there was never any events or anything like that, you know, social events or anything. I mean, the only thing that was available was sports. And then after you got old enough, then the bars became the next avenue of things, you know, and the lounges and stuff where you can go eat dinner and drink and talk. So those kind of things.
Okay, I see. And, that phrase that you mentioned, the, you know, just that feeling of when you know that you're different. I'm just sort of curious, when do you feel that do you feel like you always felt that way? Or do you have a sense of when you began to feel like, oh, I feel different than some other people that are
around? Sixth grade was the first time that I think I noticed that, you know, that I might be different. You know, I don't think I could really put a definition on that, but I knew that it was just different. You know, when somebody would talk about how they felt about a situation, I wouldn't feel that way, you know, and, you know, but I was comfortable with it. I was never uncomfortable with it.
Okay. Gotcha. And so you graduate from high school.
Yes.
You mentioned earlier that you have 5 different degrees. So I'm trying to figure out like,
I joined the Air Force start? Immediately.
Oh, okay. So that's what happens next is Air Force. Tell me about that.
Well, that was great. I was, you know, only 17 when I left to go to the Air Force and went to San Antonio to basic. And that was fascinating because, you know, you come from your group of people and then quickly you figure out other people that are different like you. You know, I think there was like 12 and a flight of 60 people that I was aware of. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just try to hook up to them, you know. I was kind of like more feminine woman at that time, and, well, still am, I mean. But at first, like, they didn't really accept me too much. Mm-hmm. You know, they just kind of treated me like a kid, really. I mean, they were only 20 and 21, but I was 17. So, you know, I had to kind of hang out with them and talk a little bit more. And then we just all became friends, and some of them I still know till you know, throughout my life, you know, through correspondence, not necessarily I see them, but I know them, you know. Yeah. So that was the first outside of school and home family existence type thing. So that was a great experience, the service was. You know, at that time, they didn't focus so much. They didn't have the don't ask, don't tell and all that. The focus, everybody knew you just had to say you weren't to stay in the service, and we were all comfortable with that.
And they did ask us three different times. And right. So there's just this understanding of if you want to stay, you just say, oh yeah, like, you know, I'm not gay or I'm straight or whatever. And then that's just kind of.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And how long were you in the service? How many years?
4 years.
4 years. Okay.
And then I came home and joined the reserves.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about that. Just that decision, how that worked, what that was like.
Well, you know, just probably wanting to come home and, that was a great, finished my education. That was my first degree, you know, so I finished my education there and, that was the first healthcare degree. I got a bachelor's degree there and just, you know, medic healthcare. I didn't go into nursing yet. I had a full scholarship to Eastern, but I decided to join the service and get away. And that was probably because I was different too. You know, I was just trying to get away from the pressures of what you knew that would not be accepted and maybe a little bit freer lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all that plays into things. You know, life choices are sometimes made because of where you feel most comfortable and accepted and those things. So then, I'm 65 now, so I don't remember every detail of everything, but I went through a different type of growing. It was all based around education. You know, I first got another bachelor's in business degree, and then I got a nursing, and then I got those were all bachelor's, and then I got a master's in nursing. And then I ended up with an MBA at the end healthcare management and business. So it all kind of came together because I ended up owning Florida Precision Oncology with seven other physicians. And so that nursing healthcare side and the business side really kind of, you know, came in together. And then I ran Stanford cancer program in Palo Alto, California for many years. I was the only non-physician leader there. And then I went on to come back home and I ran the program at the University of Miami, the satellite program with Sylvester Cancer Center, and then broke away and joined these doctors and, started our own company. And then later we were bought out by GenesisCare. So, you know, I've had but in between that time, I owned my own painting company and I hired all ladies. It was called Woman and Company. I've laid blacktop. I worked on a construction crew for 3 summers in a row with Jan Tackett and, worked with her on a construction crew building houses. So I learned a lot there. And that was cool because she was a woman builder. And Phyllis Montgomery, she was a woman builder and in Lexington. So that was a great experience. I worked at Kingland on the horse farms during the summers, you know. I mean, I did a lot of stuff. Then I taught school in the early 2000s. I became the director of at-risk education, and I was hired by Grant County Schools. Their dropout rate was around 10%, and we got it down to below 2%. I was an at-risk director, and I was raising foster sons at that time. I had as many as 9 at a time. We were very successful, and they were all boys. Because I had a son, and so we raised all boys, Rita and I did, and it was. But once again, you know, we didn't disclose things on that either, you know, because, okay. Yeah, we both taught school, and we've kind of seen everything evolve, you know, through time. Not always. I can't tell you that I think it's always come a long way, you know, to be honest with you. Because, you know, now there's no bars that I know of in these towns, and there's really no place for people to go and hang out and eat and talk and socialize that I'm aware of. Not like it used to be. You know, in the old days in Lexington, the only women's place to go was the country, the one that we started. Mm-hmm. But then there was Johnny Angels and the Living Room, all those places downtown. that people went to, but at least it was a place to hang out with people that you knew.
Yeah.
But that's not the case nowadays. Everything's more mm-hmm. intertwined and mixed and, you know, and maybe I don't know because I'm not in the young world, you know, what people do. So, but I just know the difference, you know.
No. I mean, at least like the places I have lived, no, you know, women's or lesbian specific.
No.
Yeah. No, never.
No. Yeah. But it was really great. The country was really mm-hmm. cool. Mm-hmm. You know, I was obviously the manager and the construction worker. There were three partners, me, Ellen, and Joyce Baker, who died just 3 weeks ago.
Really?
Well, three months ago. They just had her celebration of life last Saturday. So we owned that and then later sold it to J.C. Conley. But the neat thing about the country was, well, first it was Pizza Hut, Sir Pizza place. And, you know, I had to tear all the brick out and put the glass in and change the whole thing. And at first we let everybody in. The first month we just charged an admission at the door and let everybody in. We served beer and wine, disco music. We had great music. Louie was a gal. She was really savvy on with music. She was the DJ. And it was such a fun place. But then I realized in the third and fourth week that it was a little problematic letting everybody come in the door.
Tell me more about that. Yeah.
So the girls really didn't feel safe all the time.
Yeah.
You know, every now and then we get somebody just wander in and we didn't really have any way to prevent that, you know. And yeah. Since we were all women, we were kind of vulnerable a little bit. So we made the decision to make it a private club. You know, you paid a monthly membership, and you could, but you had to be a member or with a member to come in. So that's the only way that we could stop people at the door and not allow it, you know. And Peggy Wilby, who's deceased now too, she was one of the waitresses and kind of the bouncer, and Louie and myself and Joyce, we were all the ones that kind of watched the parking lot and things. Like if somebody would come in and say something's going on out in the parking lot, we quickly all go out together as a group, which, you know, because you try not to involve the police too much and get too much, because you don't want to draw attention to yourself. That's the big thing, because really what you're trying to do is go to a place you feel safe, that you feel that you're with people like yourselves and that you're allowed to be who you are and be comfortable, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was so important. So that's why we made a private club and those type of things. So that was the reasoning. And we, you know, we didn't really have any bad events. I mean, we had a couple of things that we had to go out and break up in the parking lot. And we did have to kind of stand in a row at the door and tell several different people throughout the existence of the club that you weren't allowed to come in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know. Yeah. And so some follow-up questions about some of the things you just said, that the membership, the monthly membership and the card and, you know, coming in if you're a member or if you're like with a member, how long did that last for? How long was that?
The whole time we had it, we did that.
Okay.
Until, yeah. And I think when JC and them took it, I don't think they continued it, but by then, you know, it was, the rules were established in the community. Right. It wasn't like something they would target like they did at the beginning, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
And,
all right.
You know, mostly we had problems with people that would, you know, they were a member maybe later on, not the first part, but after JC, people that were members and maybe, you know, might be dating somebody there and somebody on the outside and, you know, those kind of things. But we were able to intervene in a positive way and not, you know, not cause a lot of problems, call the police a lot or anything. And protect, more than anything, protect people. I was always the last one out. So, you know, I was there late and, you know, making sure everybody was out of the parking lot, nobody's in the bathrooms, you know, mm-hmm. safe. Mm-hmm. I mean, that really became the core. I mean, it became a community. I think that the person that interviewed in Lexington Herald, it was a community. It was a safe haven, you know. We didn't take a lot of pictures. You know, we just all could come there and be after ball games and, you know, on the weekends and just really have a good time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is all great. So some follow-up questions. What is your recollection of those beginning conversations that led to the formation of the country? Because I'm assuming, you know, you all started talking, we're like, hey, like, we need our own space. Tell me about just the formation of the idea, you know?
Well, Ellen probably was the original thinker of that she wanted to do that.
Okay.
Then she called Joyce, who I was living with at the time, and then I got involved because really I'm the kind of doer kind of person.
I can tell by all the stuff you were saying earlier.
Ellen wouldn't have known how to do any of this stuff. She had the idea. And then Joyce, you know, was a team player and bartended and did those things. But, you know, I did all the construction work because everybody was working. I was working too, but I could handle that as well. But, you know, understand the codes and making the bathrooms handicapped and, you know, all the stuff you have to do to really to meet the compliance issues of opening a club and then go through all the inspections. And so the opening conversation was really pretty much what it ended up. The genesis was a safe, comfortable place for people to go and be who you are, that you could in your neighborhood, you know, because Lexington is the neighborhood and Lane Allen was a perfect location to all the many places that we all lived. It was a great central location and you know, so it was available. That Sir Pizza was available. They'd gone out of business, and so that made that a perfect spot for that as well.
Yeah, right. And you mentioned that there is this whole process, obviously, of inspection, getting license, construction. Right. Was there ever any issue with, did the people you're working with, did they know that you were trying, that you were building like a women's bar, or was that not really something that...
No, because you don't really have to disclose that, you know, because you really...
Yeah.
It was the Country and LLC, but, and the name The Country, of course, came from, you know, when I was in the service in San Antonio, the largest bar in downtown San Antonio for all genders was The Country. Mm-hmm. So I had a great fondness there. When I was in basic training, you get to go out one night during that 8-week period. And that's where I took the taxi ride to, because the other people had told me about it. So we all went there that night and had a great time. So that was where the name came from. And so that's, and then I think they might have changed the name when JC and them bought it. But
yeah, to the Hidden Door.
Yeah, the Hidden Door, which is appropriate too, because it was back in a little code.
It's Hidden Door, yeah.
Yeah, when I had to take out all the brick and the glass, it became a kind of a code back in there. But anyway, but I think that, so the name, we came up with the name, applied for the license and did all that. And I stayed and got all the different, you know, and it was just a wine and beer bar. You know, they don't really ask naturally, you know, things. But, you know, as you get the Coca-Cola people, you know, have to come in and service, and then you get to know them and stuff. We didn't really have any issues with that. They were all pretty cool.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. You know. Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't have any. But remember, you know, there was no like big announcement or knowledge. It was just a standard bar and wine bar, you know, that was going to be open, you know, 4 or 5 days a week and that kind of thing. So there wasn't really, and it had already been a public place. So that, you know, that was already set in stage, you know, so.
Okay, I see. And do you have any recollection of what days and hours you all were open while you were, you know, directly involved in managing?
Well, we tried, because there were softball games on Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and of course, and then sometimes on Sunday in the afternoons, we'd have a, you know, private, you know, we weren't as restrictive because we didn't really... You know, I don't think we ever formally made it a private club, like legally a document. So that didn't happen. But we tried to, you know, mostly close on Sunday and Mondays, and then eventually didn't open during fall season. We didn't open on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and we'd be in there Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then we'd have special events Sunday afternoons or birthdays on Tuesday. That was a cool thing about having a private, you know, club. if it was a big ball event, it was a city tournament, it was running on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we'd stay open those nights, you know. And we'd always try to be open by, you know, 6 o'clock when people got off work. I was always in there around 4, you know, and usually left, you know, sometime between 1:30 and 2, so.
And you mentioned earlier that you all didn't take too many pictures, and I can imagine, you know, there's like several reasons for that. But I just wanted to ask.
We didn't have iPhones either.
Right. Yeah. That's what I meant by several reasons. Cause like, you know, obviously there could be like concerns and then also, you know, technology. But did you all ever take pictures there to your recollection?
Oh yeah, we did.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was just curious cause all the other people I've talked about have been like, no, like I never took any, you know, pictures.
Yeah. Well, we took a few like, and I'd love to find them for you. And we just moved here and we will try to find them.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
But you just never know, you know, because I lost some of my older pictures that I know some of them were in a flood, but I still might have a few. And if I do come across any, I'll make sure to, I know there's one of Peggy because she was quite flamboyant and she was the waitress for all of us. And she was just delightful. And she always dressed the part, and you know, she was just kind of like a real important piece of that time period. And Louie was too. She was the DJ, and then I was, you know, kind of the manager of it all and bartended. And I think and Joyce bartended some. Ellen would come by some, but not much. You know, I think it was more a romantic vision in her mind rather than something she was really comfortable with, you know, doing. So but yeah. We'd see her occasionally, you know. Mm-hmm. And then we'll try to come up with that, but no, there weren't many photos taken.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. And I ask everyone this, but so the best of your recollection, would you mind describing just the interior of the country, as in you walk in, what rooms are there, what do you see, what are sort of your recollections of what it looked like visually inside?
Absolutely. Well, when I first opened it, we didn't have a pool table right there. The dance floor was when you come in, you come around the corner. We had the people come in the one door, and it was a small dance floor with a mirror ball and all that, and everything was in one room. Well, we got the opportunity to open up the other side. Mm-hmm. So that was like in 3 or 4 months, we opened up the other side, which gave us a huge dance floor where we'd have sometimes women bands like Rita Beach, actually, who I live with now, her band came. We had some other women's bands come and play music for us. So we had a large dance room for bands and dancing. The DJ could look through the window there and watch and play the music from this side, which was the original side that had the bar, the DJ, and then we put in 2 pool tables. And, you know, hey. So we had 2 pool tables, and we had a lot of pool tournaments, and we had, you know, sometimes Sunday brunch and afternoons and just sit around and play pool and play music, those kind of things. So that's what it looked like. You come into a little, hello. You come into a little kind of cove, and then, you know, straight ahead is the big dance room that you can't see because we put a wall up there. So when somebody came in, they actually didn't see anybody. Hold on just a second.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Rita. I think she's out there. Anyway.
Okay, so next question. What would your typical night at the country be like? Say, like, you go in, you said usually you get there like 4 or something to, I guess, get things ready. Yeah. Tell me about just that process of what your typical evening/night at the country would be like.
Well, I'd go in much earlier on Fridays because the Coke person would come and the beer delivering the, you know, kegs and, you know, whatever else we were doing and, you know, checking the sound system and those kind of things, cleaning, you know, clean at night, clean in the morning too. But so you just really prep for the evening, you know, make sure you had somebody's going to work the door because you wanted the door where people would come in and they really couldn't see anybody at that moment. We mm-hmm. made sure that you could had to walk. You couldn't see the dance floor. You couldn't see the pool table. Couldn't see the bar. You had to make a turn and then you'd come into the, where the pool tables were. So just prepping and getting everything ready. And, you know, we had some jam nights. I mean, there'd be, you know, it was just so fun, you know, 100, 150 people there. And then some nights there's only, you know, 20 people, you know, so depending on what's going on in town and what night of the week it is and, you know, what events are going on.
Right. Yeah. And how did the country function as, you know, a business in terms of profit? Was it doing well financially? Was it not always doing well financially? How did that aspect work?
Well, we all worked and had pretty good jobs. So we made an initial investment, you know. I guess the best way to say it is that we had to prop it up sometimes from our own funding, but then there were months and periods where it, you know, was able to hold its own. Was it ever highly profitable? Absolutely not. I mean, we only could serve beer and wine. You know, we served sandwiches and stuff like that, but we didn't sell them. You know, they were more of a event type thing, you know, so it wasn't on the scale of, you know, a big restaurant or anything like that. Had it been like that, obviously that could have been a much more profitable thing. But it was just kind of a labor of the heart, you know, supported by, and then people were, you know, generous if we needed things, you know, so everybody was mindful of it. Nobody ever minded paying the dues or helping out, you know, that kind of, I mean, it was truly a family community type center for us.
Yeah.
Home away from home kind of deal.
Gotcha. Yeah. You mentioned that sometimes you all would have, I mean, in addition to the usual, like being open and drinks and dancing and talking, that sometimes you would have like pool tournaments and brunches.
Yes.
Would that usually be the same group of people, the sort of like,
just not necessarily. It changed, oh, yeah. You know, so yeah. We'd have talent shows and those kind of things, you know, dance contest. And it was a disco era, so we had a couple of disco contests and those kind of things. So, you know, whatever it took to just really, and we, you know, of course, holidays, St. Patty's Day and Valentine's and Easter, we did all that upright, the holidays. So it's very nice.
Yeah.
And it's a very positive memory.
That's what, yeah, everyone has said that, like everyone I've talked to, it's always like, it's just, oh, this is a great place, you know, nothing
yeah, it was, bad. We all needed it. And we just really, no, but there wasn't any, you know, everybody was comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. What was it? And I can kind of infer this, but just for the benefit of the interview, what was it that made the country different from, say, you know, the bar complex or, you know, the living room, Johnny Angels, whatever it, you know, it was known as then? What made it different from that? You know, because it sounds like it was something like you all had like a need that wasn't being met. So you're like, okay, let's like, you know, meet our needs and create the space where we can do what we need to do.
Right.
Yeah. I was just kind of curious.
I'd say everybody kind of knew everybody. Whether they did it, I mean, we met people there and they became life friends. But like, I guess the best way to describe it is like, I remember, I didn't even know them that well, but I knew them. I remember two girls that were bought a Jeep and they were packing up to go cross country. And we all kind of celebrated them going. And then they had a really bad wreck. And I remember that we all came back there, even though we didn't know them. Some knew them better than some did, but we all knew of them. And we all, it became part of us, you know. And when people would move away, so there, it had its own heart, you know, it had its own being because it was a connection that people established. And once you did that, you could just come in there and feel comfortable. You knew that even though you might not know everybody, you would get to know everyone, you know? And so I think that's the best way I can describe it. You know, it had its own heart and soul that we all connected to.
Okay. And this is something that some people have mentioned and some people don't really recall. Were there ever any men who went to the country, like, as, like, customers? Was that something?
Oh, yeah. But, like, Gene Bug, he was one. He died of AIDS back in the late 90s, I guess. But, yeah, there were, like, once again, they were friends of people with memberships, you know. And there were several others. I don't recall all their names, but he particularly stands out, you know. But they weren't, like, frequent visitors, but they were always welcome. It wasn't, you know, it was really, it was really trying to make sure that who came in was the door they were accepting and comfortable with us, so we didn't feel uncomfortable because we had to maintain that level of protection. But yeah, we had several. It was, you know, when we'd have events and stuff, some they'd just come by and drink together, you know.
Yeah, right, right. And just a few more sort of basic sort of demographic questions like that. What's your sense for sort of the racial demographics of the people who came to the country as customers? Was it mostly white? Was it mixed? Was it, you know, just sort of what's your recollection of that?
Well, I think it was equal kind of to the demographics of the town and the people on the sports teams, you know. I mean, you know, we had everybody that was on the sports team that was African-American or Hispanic, they would all come there same as us. It never really was a subject in any way, but it never, it mirrored the ball teams. So, you know.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I mean, you know, we had, you know, lots of folks, you know, come, but it was equal ratio to what was on the teams, you know. It wasn't, I mean, you know, obviously it was predominantly white because that area is, you know, so.
Okay. And another question. So, back then when, you know, you all were at the country and socializing, hanging out, did anyone use words like butch or femme to describe themselves or other people? Or is that not really part of the vocabulary so much?
Yeah, we just at that time in our lives, I mean, you know, we were familiar with those words, but those weren't like, we didn't use any of the labeling. I rarely ever heard the labeling. It just was just a, you know, I mean, jokingly, somebody might say, oh, you're so butch or something, you know, or femme or whatever, but not really. I mean, I never even noticed labeling until I, you know, got older and, you know, social network and those kind of things. So no, it wasn't really part of it. I mean, we're aware of it, but some words I hadn't even heard of, you know, until we, I mean, some of these new, you know, the new, labels that people obviously need and want, and group all that together is more about social networking and those kind of things and the awareness of the world today.
Okay, I see.
You know, but no, that wasn't much of. We were just kind of just, you know, hometown girls, all of us. You know, most of them within a 20-year span of age of each other and. So it was pretty conservative in a lot of ways, I think would be the best way to say it.
Yeah.
You know,
okay. I understand. And, another question, this is kind of jumping a little bit. But what are, if you can recall any, what are some of your favorite memories of the country, whether it's a memory of a specific event or just memories of certain feelings, or fragments of memories, just whatever kind of comes up for you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think I worked at General Telephone then. And I think the cool thing was when you'd go there after work, I don't know, you just kind of felt relaxed.
Yeah.
And you just felt accepted. And even though my nature is never to not feel accepted. See, I just, my personality, you know, I'm going to fit in and do what I got to do everywhere. But there is something genuine and you long for a place that you can just go and be totally comfortable with yourself, you know, that you don't have to put on any, you know, front or anything, or feel comfortable to talk about anything. I mean, I will tell you, I love the big events, when the disco music, I Will Survive, and that kind of music. I mean, that's just such a, you know, MacArthur Park, and those long drawn out songs. And when we just dance and dance and dance until we couldn't dance anymore. And, you know, Peggy in her waitress outfit coming around the corner, you know, putting on her own show for whatever, shooting pool and dancing and sitting at the bar, and Louis back there playing the best tunes. I mean, when you really hit that maximum high of just really having a great time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't really do that. I mean, you can't ever hit that high if you don't feel safe, if you don't feel accepted, and you don't feel comfortable. So if you feel those things and you get into that energy, I mean, that's just a beautiful moment in your life. And you love that, you know, that's youth.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so many times we hadn't had the privilege of having that. Mm-hmm. You know, we go to a bar and sit there. We couldn't participate because you never could get up to that level that you could when you're with your own people and you're safe, you're comfortable, and you're that you feel that you're with people that know who you are. So that's I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, definitely. And you've mentioned this word a few times, and other people have too, this idea of, you know, safety, like that one of the appeals or gifts of the country was like, oh, we're safe here. We're with, you know, just our people, basically.
Right.
And I wanted to ask more, what, just for the purposes of the interview, because obviously I can kind of imagine, but safe from what were things that you all wanted to be like safe away from, you know?
Well, I think safety is many things. Privacy is one, you know, because, you know, we at that time, we wouldn't have felt totally comfortable with any of these things.
Mm-hmm.
I think safe from maybe if you drank too much, somebody trying to hurt you or something out in the parking lot, or coming in when you're in, you know, those kind of things. I think safety that, you know, it's kind of like to be in a place that has walls that, you know, others can't penetrate so easily, you know, that we're all aware and that we're all trying to, you know. And it wasn't something that was just talked about a lot. It was just this feeling that you had.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of my friends, they'd say, oh, no, I don't go to bars like that. I'm not comfortable. And I'd have to say, oh, no, this is different. You know, this is totally different. Just come. If you're not comfortable after 30 minutes, you can go home. And never did anybody leave, you know. I mean, once they got there, it was a whole different feeling of what they really loved, you know. And when it went away, it was very sad.
Yeah, that's something I'm going to be circling back to in a minute, just sort of like the eventual end. Before we get there, I wanted to ask very quickly, did you all ever have any visits from the police? Did any of the police stop by?
On two occasions, they walked through. You know, and that focus is more about age. It's more about those kind of things. But we were strict about that. I mean, as far as I know, that, you know, we didn't have any mess ups that that we were aware of, you know. So, you know, because we were all, you know, in our 20s or so, you know, 20 to 40 range. So, and I think that, but they were nice. They were, you know, they were just kind of cool, just kind of grin funny a little bit, walk around, not stay too long, you know, look at the board of the licenses and head out, you know. I don't know why they came, if that was normal, I have no idea, but I didn't really try to overthink it. Because then, you know, you don't want to get into that either. Because if you're wanting to be in a safe place, you don't want to get paranoid about those kind of things, you know. So we just kind of were really nice to them. They were nice to us, and we didn't seem to have any issues. And I think one of the gals ended up knowing one of them one time when she came in. So that was kind of cool. That's always a good thing when, you know, there's a little network going on there. So.
Right. And how long were you involved with the country in the capacity of all the capacities that you were? Because obviously you were managing things. Sometimes you'd be bartending. Sometimes you'd be opening, closing. How long were you doing that for?
Yeah, probably a year and a half. Yeah.
Yeah. And what sort of brought into you, I guess, doing those sort of tasks? Was it not enough time or, what sort of happened with that?
Well, I mean, it didn't make a great deal of money. So we all have to at some point decide that we're going to grow up and do something else bigger. So, I took a job out of town. So, I was ready to go in that aspect, but I didn't want to leave it. I was glad when JC took it, she's a bar person and a responsible business person herself. So we were glad about that. I don't think it lasted that long after. I don't know, though, to be honest with you. I went there a time or two, but I don't know how long.
That was actually what I was about to ask, was like, did you ever just visit the country just as a customer or whatever?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about that. Was it kind of the same place still, or was it a little different? Or again, no, it's really the same.
Like anything, if you get a new house, you change a few walls and colors, but it was the same feel and it was still our place to hang out.
Okay. And you kind of just mentioned this. Do you remember it closing? Do you remember the country door? I guess, or not the country door, the country, the hidden door. Yeah. Do you remember when that?
No, I don't remember. I mean, somebody called me and said, did you hear they closed the country and how sad that was? But no, I don't remember any particular event associated or awareness.
Okay. And do you have any recollection of like why it closed, why that happened?
I think it just became maybe not viable, as far as a business side. So I think, once again, I told you there were times the three of us had to prop it up with our own money. So and it had good times and bad times, but I think that would probably have been the reason. I went out with JC. We just went to a church, Human Connection, in Cincinnati, Ohio, just Sunday. So we just saw her. So
that's so funny.
So she's managing a blues bar in Lexington on Monday nights, and so she's obviously had that in her as well as all of us did, so.
Yeah. I've really been trying to pin her down for an interview for a while. It looks like it might happen. So we'll see.
But, okay. Well, I can help you with that. I'll encourage her.
Yeah. Do a little encouragement.
I will.
Thanks.
I will.
Because it seems like she's sort of like the second half of the story
is.
In a lot of ways.
She is. Yeah. She is. And she's kind of a Lexington icon, we always say that JC, she has a big house over on one side of Lexington, and she took in all the homeless, heartbroken women that were in between relationships. And, we had a lot of parties there. And so she was a perfect person, much like I had a lot of big women's events, in my life. So, I had the big one at Lawrenceburg, and then I had the one in Dry Ridge where it was a tri-state one where, we had, Rita would know all the names of them. You would know them as well. But Holly Near and all those people came, big entertainers. Mm-hmm. We had a 3-day event in there. So I did a lot of those kind of things. So the country was just a isolated, building and a place that we did those very things with. Women are wholesome. They like, I love that about them. I mean, they just want to, sometimes they just want to drink and eat and talk and dance. And, sometimes they aren't even with somebody and they love to do that. If you go to a bar, even now, straight bar, some woman will get up and just dance by herself. And the country kind of allowed women to be women, different kind of women, but we were able to be ourselves, and just be comfortable.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way of putting it, and I know what you're trying to say. Tell me more about these women's events that you just mentioned. Just like in summary,
Arena and I, well, we've had one in Lawrenceburg for 2 years, and that was huge, you know, Real World String Band, Rita's Band, and I mean, it was just a huge event, and we had that every fall. We would have one. Then we had one at our first home in Dry Ridge, and it ended up being a benefit, but then we were approached by this women's group out of Indiana and Ohio, Tri-State Women's Club, and they asked us if they could rent our farm, and we would put the event on. So we had over 1,200 women show up for that. It was huge. Yeah, it was a 3-day event. Everybody camped, and we had music. We had booths where, you know, they'd sell cut jewelry and sculptures they'd make and paintings and all kinds of cool things. And we had a lot of dog classes and cats, and the vets came. And we had all these booths set up and down the driveway and big stages. We had 4 different stages, a big concession area. And then we made a big breakfast on Sunday morning when it was over. And so it was truly a camaraderie event, and met so many great people from all over. So we did that for 3 years. Oh. And
was there a name for that event? Like, did it have a name?
Yeah, the Tri-State Women's. We've got all the posters still from those events. Okay. I can give you those. I do have those.
Oh, yeah. I'll take anything.
because that's pretty cool.
It is.
I mean, and we've got T-shirts that have all of the things on there, and all the singers like Tracy Walker and Holly Near, and I can't remember. She just broke up with somebody, and she was. I wish Rita was around. She could help me remember their names. But great, just a great time, and and people just mourned when we wouldn't do it anymore. I mean, but you know, you get busy, your kids get older, and it's quite an ordeal to put that kind of event on. We had a big lake, a big acre lake. People would swim, and I mean, it was just a lot of fun. And you know, you have to watch everybody, the safety and everything there too, because you know, you have to make sure people don't drink too much. Same way at the country, you know, we have to, you know, slow people down, drive people home. Did a lot of that. Mm-hmm. I know JC did too, but we did as well.
Yeah. Okay. So. Yeah. And at that, say, you know, at the tri-state sort of event that you
were
at a couple times, was it all women who attended, because it was more of like, it's like a women's event, or was
rarely anything but women, because you know, some of them didn't keep their clothes on, they'd be skinny dipping, you know, I mean, whatever. We ask everybody to stay clothed up in the area, but you know, they camped. I mean, you know, they took showers and you know, use water hoses and whatever. I mean, we just kind of opened our home up to everybody. So, you know, it was, it was truly a women's event, you know.
Yeah.
And people played music all night, and we cooked, and I made big breakfast, Rita and I served. We'd serve 100, 120 women that last Sunday. The stragglers, we called them, that were, you know, cleaning up or had an event or something. So we fed everybody, and it was just a great time, too. Same atmosphere and a lot of the same people, you know.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I imagine so. And
but then we had in Indiana and Ohio, so you know that that became the tri-state.
Women's Fair.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, you know, at the country and at these different events that you've either, you know, attended or hosted yourselves, that you all are just free to sort of be yourselves and not have to like worry about anything. You're comfortable, safe. And you mentioned the idea of like women being free to just be women. And I was curious I'm always like digging basically into like people's wording. And so I just curious to hear more about like women being free to be women. Like, tell me more about that. It's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I think that's very important, because, you know, a lot of these women, you know, some of them would bring their young babies. Some of them would have babies sometimes. And some of them would be business people, lawyers. And whoever you were, you felt comfortable to set a table up with your name on it and, you know, your business cards or your it might be some craft you've done or something you've created or something you've written. We had poetry reading and things like that, you know, in the afternoons. And, you know, just it's just there's something magical about like, and it might be all in our head. I don't know, but I don't think so. But it's if you walk down a driveway and everybody that you come across is a woman, mm-hmm. well, there is a certain level of you know, it does decrease your fear of things. For you know, because statistically speaking, and I raised boys and have a son and a grandson, mm-hmm. so but statistically speaking, we're just not quite as hostile and tactical as men are. So, you know, we never had to worry about guns and knives, and I mean, really, and we had now when we had the tri-state, it was very eclectic mix of folks. You know, I mean, large groups of people from all cultures came and. You know, sections of the country. Some people came down from Canada, mm-hmm. over the Rhine in Cincinnati. I mean, so it, but it was just different. It was, you could let your guard down a little bit. And it was, you know, I mean, think about that, 120 strangers having breakfast together. I mean, yeah. But, you know, if you came and you saw that somebody needed to get the biscuits out of them, you just go help. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what the event ended up being like, you know. Everybody helped, and it was just really a sense of community. And you know, we took care of the entertainers, and gave them little areas, you know, and everybody just kind of felt pretty, you know, like something you really look forward to in your life. It made you feel more connected with yourself, not just with others, but yourself. So, I mean, I think that's the thing that these type of things do, you know, because. We do tend to, you know, stay in our shell a little bit, and we do tend to, based on our own beliefs, whether they're real or not real is irrelevant, you know, because they're in our mind. But you do tend to do that. But when you go to these events, you really kind of, you do get in touch with others, the music, the current music, there's the situations, their offerings of life insurance and lawyers and people that you might need in the community that, so that's kind of our first social awareness time in our life that we start to use those people over other people because we want to support our own kind. But more so than that, you get connected to yourself. Mm. You learn more about yourself and who you are,
yeah,
and what you like. And all of a sudden you get choices and you get options and you get the opportunity to express yourself in a different way. So I think it's very, I think these type of the bar, the Tri-State Women's Event, it's very, it's self-awareness and self-growth as much as anything.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. So I love that, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you would want that for your own children. Mm-hmm. So naturally you should want it for your own self, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know, to be able to do that. So I think that's what it does for us. Because I mean, I'll tell you about me.
Because I was about to ask that, actually. Yeah, that's what
okay,
I was about to ask.
So I'm the conservative one in my bunch, okay? So I'll tell you that. I'm pretty strict. And my son actually tells me I'm the worst lesbian he's ever met. I mean, it's in an affectionate way.
Right,
okay?
Right.
And they think it's so funny that I, being who I am, because I've protected myself. You know, I'm a businesswoman. I don't want anything to interfere with my business. I did march on Washington, you know, for when they did Don't Ask, Don't Tell, when they did the HIV quilt, and then the another event. I can't recall what it was, but human rights and those type of events that I did. But what it did for somebody like me is know that it's okay to be a little, let your guard down a little bit, you know. That everything doesn't come with a cost, you know. Yeah. And so I, as much as anyone, grew during those times, you know, because I came out of my own shell or the closet or whatever you want to call it. But I do think, and my family thinks it's so funny that I'm being interviewed for one of the first women's bars way back, you know. And But that's as much my business side as who I am. So it's combining who you are and your own needs, plus the needs of those around you, you know. So I think that that's, you know, something I don't really usually share that much, but that's who I am, mm-hmm. you know, and I try not to fault people that are way out there and who really sometimes do the march for us and really blaze the trail for us, because they have, everyone has a role in this, the movement and acceptance and the human connection of what we do. So people like me have a role, and people like you have a role, you know, people like, even my son has a role, because he has to change some things and think about how he says things, you know, and sometimes he makes the big speech to make the difference, you know, based on his feelings. So I think everybody has a role in really making tomorrow a better place.
Yeah.
And I've done my part, even in my conservative nature, I still participated and made the difference, you know. And could I have done more? Absolutely. Do I wish I had done more? At times. But I'm still thrilled that I was able to be part of the change that we all benefit from today.
Yeah, right. And that's actually those sort of concepts you're just touching on, that brings us into the last few questions. They're all sort of like sort of big picture kind of retrospective kind of stuff. And yeah, I wanted to ask you because I know you mentioned that your family thought it was really funny about the interview about, you know, the women's bar and all of that. I wanted to ask you
they like to give me a hard time. Anyway, so.
I wanted to ask what you thought when you first heard about like this oral history project that's happening. Like you hear that someone's going around doing these interviews. Like what did you think?
Well, I mean, it didn't bother me at all. I was totally fascinated with it. You know, I was captivated. And I've been talking to you for what, a year now. So
I know, right? Like.
Yeah. So, I mean, from way back. And
yeah.
No, I mean, I found it remarkable, you know, and I really, you know, it's kind of like you never think about that. I mean, because see, you didn't do it for that reason. So you never think about that was the only thing happening around us. Thank you.
Yeah.
So it was fascinating to me. It's kind of like, you know, that song, that show we all watch at Christmas, It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like, you think, well, had you not been there, would that have happened at all, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's really cool to think that, you know, that you were part of history in that way, you know? And, I mean, I know that I think what's fascinating about this life is, well, first off, it's very hard. There's nothing easy about it. Especially when you're young and until you kind of get on your feet and you know, it's tough and you have to feel, you know, there's always somebody out there that needs help to get through the day. Because think about, you know, like I'm a strong woman, so you don't have to worry about me, but think about somebody who feels like they're different and then they're having a low moment in their life on top of that. Mm-hmm. And you think how hard and how tragic that is, you know, and that, so those are the kind of things you worry about, you know, and that, so that should be our goal. The end goal is that we get people to where they don't suffer with who they are. They so we can treat their other needs. You know, it's so important that we provide a world that people don't have to suffer with who they are to get through the day. But then if they're depressed or they have a breakup or they have any type of mental issues or any issues that they have to face, financial, you know, divorce, whatever they're going through, that they don't have to double suffer with being, you know, gay or lesbian or all the things, you know, it's, mm-hmm. I think that's what we should try to work towards, you know, and that's what I hate about this life sometimes. I mean, I love my life and I have the most wonderful relationship. I mean, I look at our life like, we're a family because we are, you know, we run it like a family. We are a family. We raise our children. We got, you know, we're like everybody else, have our own struggles. We just recently pulled our kids out of public school and put them in a Catholic school for no other reason other than to get education. You know, mm-hmm. We're just like any other typical family. We support each other. We love, we cry together. We suffer joy and loss together, just like everyone, but we're always different. It doesn't matter. But, you know, we're accepted more sometimes because we have children, because we have good jobs. So we've made our place at the table, even though sometimes people didn't pull the chair out for us and ask us to sit down. We've made our place at the table, but sometimes, but see, that makes a difference. When you make yourself at the table, then those around you grow comfortable with you. And when they learn about more about you, then they grow comfortable with the whole message. You know, all of a sudden it's not watching somebody in California on the streets. It's somebody you know and that you've grown to care about. So I think we all have a responsibility to do that every day. Some people need to do it radically. Some people can do it conservatively. But we all have that responsibility to work toward the goal that each of us don't have to suffer with the stigmatisms and the hate and the not being accepted because you're different in any way. So that's what I want my life to represent. And that's what these kind of moments and like the country and the Tri-State Women's Fest and what I do for my granddaughter or grandson or my son, all the things you do in life, that's what you want to try to get to. It's really the human connection of that. Let's not abuse ourselves or each other for being different. Don't let that be the changing of the tide.
Yeah, right. This really, everything you've been saying has been so interesting, and it really relates to, I guess it's like my third to last question, which is looking at Lexington as a city during the time of the country. So like late 70s, early 80s, and then there's Lexington now. Cause I feel like a lot of things that you were saying kind of like relate to sort of the, yeah, ideas of community, but also the passage of time. And so it just gave me an impression that you probably would have some thoughts about how much or how little has Lexington changed, you know, since the country. Basically.
Well, like I told you in the early parts of the interview, I think Lexington was more progressive natured than most cities I've been to.
Right.
And I've been to, I lived in San Francisco. I've lived in Miami, you know, I've lived and worked there, which I love. California is my favorite state in the whole world. But Lexington's probably my favorite city because Lexington kind of can see past itself a little bit. You know, it grew up bigger than it was and faster than the other cities equal to its size. And I know that from not only my experience, you know, even though we couldn't like be out and about and, you know, loud and proud back in those days. Now, I don't think that's a lot of difference, but I know that people are out and there's awareness and acceptance. You know, like I've got lots of friends in business there and they make no bones about the fact that they're, you know, gay or lesbian, whatever they are. They make no, that's just part of the culture there, you know. So that's really kind of cool. So I think Lexington, you know, if you were going to rate Lexington on a star or five star rating of progressive thinking, I think it would get a 4 for a town of its size. So I think that's real positive. And of course, it helps that UK's there, you've got the college scene and, you know, and that, you know, it's a, it's location, it's not in the mountains or in the South too much. And, you know, it does have some other appeal that makes it progressive and positive for people to grow up in. But as far as to feel that life has changed so greatly that I can walk out on the street and feel as comfortable as I did when I walked in the door of the country, no, that doesn't exist. Now, I, as a person, can, but I, as a gay lesbian woman, cannot.
Yeah. And what is it? I hear what you're saying. What is it that makes you say that?
Reality, you know, situations that you, you know, like, you know, where you told someone something and, you know, they kind of had to absorb it. And I mean, I've even traveled with people that didn't know for 10 days. I mean, I wasn't hiding anything. I mean, they just had no awareness of it, you know.
Oh, wow.
I mean, Rita and I'd both be there. I mean, we'd be our natural selves. I mean, you know, but no different from a straight couple that would be traveling with. You don't always say we're together all the time.
Right,
we assume though, you know.
Right.
So, you know, I've had to you know, and then the funniest story that ever happened to me I got a call. I meant to turn that off, but was in Walmart in California. So Rita and I, she needed a carotid artery surgery, and I wanted her to get it at Stanford. So I put her on my insurance that year, and I had to wait till after December 31st, January 1st, for her to be on my insurance. So with that came picking up her medications, because she's 11 years older than me. So I had to go to Walmart, and it was in a part of town, probably one part of San Jose somewhere. And the woman kept saying, "Where's your insurance card?" And I'm sure. And she said, "Where's her insurance card?" And I'm sure. And she kept wanting me to say, I mean, there's like 30 people around, you know, and I've already told you I'm a little conservative. So I'm trying to say, "She's on my insurance. You know, we're together." She said, "What do you mean together? She's your mother?"
Ooh, no.
I said, "No, she's not my mother. We're like together." And she went on and on and on. And I finally had to just, which is so not like me, I finally just had to haul her out and tell her. And I'm not even sure she still got it. I said, "Trust me, she's on my insurance, you know." Yeah. I said, "Are you married?" She said, "Yes." I said, "We're the same as you." She said, "No, you're not the same as me." I mean, it's like all these people. And I told Rita, I said, "I always thought it would be so much more romantic coming out than having to come out of Walmart at the pharmacy, you know?" So it was just so abusive. But but that's an important point that, you know, I still don't feel that I have the privilege. Let's say I go out to a bar tonight and, you know, like, my favorite song plays, you know, and, you know, you want to dance. I don't feel comfortable doing that still, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's, see, different from you, your age, and like me growing up, you know, it's all about what's in there that you have to work with. You know, you've got to, now, does it bother me if others do it? No. But, you know, I have to be who I am. And you know, that's kind of where it is. But I'm still very proud of the country, the tri-state women's events, and all the things that I've been able to lead and accomplish. And, you know, I'm going to be happy about it. And I just know those are magic moments.
And that sort of leads me into, I guess, like my final, like, sort of big question, really, which is, we've spent, you know, a little over an hour talking about mostly the country. Obviously, you came to the event this summer, which, thank you for going out of your way.
I'm thrilled I came. It's wonderful.
Yeah, no, I mean, you were like so excited to be there. It was awesome. But, you know, obviously there's been a lot of country thinking and talking going on lately. And so I wanted to ask, you know, how do you feel looking back on it now, sort of like digging up these memories and telling the whole story? You know, how do you feel like sitting here looking back on it all now?
I think what's the most amazing thing, like after it was over and you move on with your life, you never would have believed that it would become such a significant event, not only in your life, but in your life, because you're obviously doing some sort of dissertation or study on this. And then all the other people, that's when the cool stories happen. You know, when you hear like Smoke and different people talking about what it meant to them, you know. And I think at the moment, it's just like so many things in life, you don't realize the significance of it. So I'm thrilled about that. You know, you have to be thrilled anytime you've touched people's lives in a positive way, and that you might have been that person there that difficult day when they didn't have to deal with being different and they were able to get through their other trials and tribulations. You know, I mean, that I don't know that there wasn't some gal sitting at a table at the country that was working through these things, and it allowed her the confidence and the support without anybody saying a word, but just the fact that she was somewhere where she knew people loved, understood, and cared for, you know, whether indirect or directly, and that she was able to get through that moment in her life. I mean, that's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. So I was just mesmerized, and it became such a, and I thank you for taking it on and being such a, and hounding the, you know, hounding us and beating the pavement. And no, it's good. That's how you have to do it.
Yeah. You know, thank you. Thank you for letting me hound you for a year.
Oh yeah. I've enjoyed it. And I'm so thrilled I got to come
me
and meet
too.
You
it
at
finally
the event.
Happened. Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And it was a great event. And
yeah.
And you really, it was fun. It brought back wonderful memories. And many people aren't here anymore.
Yeah.
You know, but those people we would have never known had we not had the country or the Tri-State Women's Event. So, you know, it's a good thing. A really good thing.
Very well said, Catherine. Very well said. Yeah, I think that actually covered sort of my last question. So I think that about wraps us up in terms of at least the things, you know, I have down. You know, at the end of the interview, I always ask the other person if there's anything else they would like to add, like if there's some memory or story or thought that is just on your mind that you haven't been able to share yet. You can take, you know, 30 seconds to or whatever to think about that now. But other than that, you know, I've wrapped up my major questions at least. And usually what happens after these interviews is, you know, I say bye, we get off. And there's a single form that everyone signs after an interview where it's just like, I give permission for the archive.
Absolutely.
Interviews. Yeah. Yep. And so I'll probably text you for your mailing address. That way I can mail you the form because unfortunately it's not like an online form.
It's all fun.
Okay, great. And that's about it. That's about it.
Okay. Well, and I think, you know, we'll end it with just the memory of all the people that aren't here anymore that participate in these things.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
The Peggy's, the Joyce's, there's many of them, but they were equally a part of those moments and those times that became so significant for all of us. So, you know, and that we should just continue to carry on and keep that goal in mind. Mm-hmm. That we should not have to live in a world where we suffer for being different.
Yeah. I'm really glad that you mentioned them again, because those names, obviously, those women came up a lot in our interview, but a lot of the other interviews too.
Yes.
Like Peggy Joyce, like all these people.
Yeah.
To the point where I actually wasn't even aware some of them were no longer, you know, with us. I was like, oh, like, I guess, you know, some of these people are, you know, walking around still. Yeah, they definitely come up a lot for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm really glad that you mentioned them again at the end there. Trying to see if there's anything else. Yeah. So after this, I'll send you a text asking for your mailing address, and I'll let you know once I've sent out the form. And you, like any other interviewee, I'll keep you posted on any, if there's ever any like major developments with the project in terms of like,
yes, great.
Just like any future events or, you know, like whatever. So,
yeah.
Like and that's about it. But thank you for your time. Thank you for doing
Thank you. I enjoyed it. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you. All right. Have a good evening.
All right. You too. Bye-bye. Bye.